All too often, we observe companies engaging suspect third parties without satisfying basic due diligence requirements. It is essential that any engagement of a third party cannot occur unless and until the prospective third party has successfully completed the due diligence process.
Global companies face unprecedented risks and challenges in today's economy. To mitigate these legal and economic risks, companies are rapidly embracing and elevating the importance of robust ethics and compliance programs to promote positive corporate citizenship. On Corruption, Crime, and Compliance, you'll hear from industry leaders and insiders about how to create effective ethics and compliance programs that will mitigate risks and maximize financial performance. Here's your host, Michael Volkoff.
Welcome, Michael Volkoff here. Happy New Year to everybody, and welcome to Corruption, Crime, and Compliance. Hope you had a great holiday. And we're going to start off the year with just a review of one last FCPA case from 2024, just to remind ourselves we finished the year. McKinsey Company and settling their FCPA charges with the DOJ for $122 million for bribery in South Africa. DOJ announced the settlement with McKinsey and Company, where basically McKinsey agreed to pay $122 million, but they were caught using bribes to secure valuable consulting contracts in South Africa. This had been a long ongoing investigation. Between 2012 to 2016, McKinsey Africa, acting through former senior partner Vikas Sagar, who pled guilty in 2022, that was under seal and then unsealed at the time of the announcement of the settlement. He conspired to pay bribes to high-ranking officials at two South African state-owned enterprises, Transnet Limited, which was the custodian of ports, rails, and pipelines in South Africa, and Eskom Holdings, South Africa's state-owned energy company. In exchange for these bribery payments, McKinsey Africa obtained sensitive, confidential, and non-public information from Transnet and Eskom through local South African business people regarding the award of consulting contracts. McKinsey Africa then used that information in proposals it submitted for multi-million dollar consulting engagements, while knowing that South African consulting firms with which McKinsey Africa had partnered would pay a portion of their fees as bribes to officials at Transnet and Eskom. As a result of the bribery scheme, McKinsey and McKinsey Africa earned profits of approximately $85 million. Now, McKinsey agreed to a three-year deferred prosecution agreement. They paid the $122,850,000, which included and was calculated based upon a 35% discount. The DOJ agreed to credit up to half of it of the fine for what the company will pay South African authorities for violations of South African law related to the same conduct. The DOJ noted both McKinsey and McKinsey Africa's cooperation and remediation. This was the third coordinated resolution between DOJ and the South African authorities working together in the last 2 years. McKinsey also agreed to enhance their compliance program where necessary and report to the government regarding those remediation efforts. Under the corporate enforcement policy, DOJ reached this resolution based on a number of factors, including the nature and seriousness of the offense. McKinsey received credit for its cooperation, and that included all the usual suspects of immediately and proactively cooperating from the inception of the investigation, numerous factual presentations at the department over the course of its investigation, collecting, reviewing, and producing documents, many of which are located abroad, reporting the discovery of document deletion efforts by Mr. Sagar, who during the internal investigation was found to be trying to delete documents, reporting in real time newly discovered information, tracing complex internal accounting money flows and currency exchange information, and preserving, collecting, and producing to DOJ documents located abroad, and engaging a third-party forensics consultant to analyze key electronic devices and providing that material to DOJ, and collecting and producing to DOJ personal bank account and email information of Mr. Sagar, who was involved in the conduct, and engaging with DOJ in response to a deconfliction request to preserve the integrity of DOJ's investigation. They also engaged in timely remedial measures, including putting the McKinsey partner involved in the scheme, Mr. Sagar, on leave when it learned of his role in the scheme, and then subsequently terminating his employment, conducting additional anti-corruption training for employees in South Africa and elsewhere in Africa, ceasing work with all state-owned enterprises for a period of time while it conducted its internal investigation, enhancing due diligence processes for third-party partners, including instituting controls to ensure that due diligence is completed before work begins on an engagement, and imposing a more rigorous risk review for public sector clients, carrying out several enhanced review processes for all sole source work that requires advance approval before the engagement can begin. Now, when we look at the bribery schemes, it's pretty familiar. If there were two cases in the last year and a half, ABB and SAP, where they resolved FCPA cases involving bribes in South Africa. And the ABB case involved Eskom being the state-owned enterprise. And on the SEC front, Gartner had resolved a bribery case this year involving South Africa as well. But like these other cases, McKinsey's bribery scheme focused on two important state-owned enterprises, Transnet, as we mentioned, and Eskom. And it was orchestrated by a senior executive being Vikas Sagar. Now, Sagar, let's talk about the Transnet scheme. Sagar initially met with a Transnet foreign official, number one, and they agreed to enlist a local business, Company One, as required under South African policy to partner with McKinsey to join in seeking contract opportunities. Sometimes this is called a local content requirement. Foreign official one then introduced Sagar to CC One. This is an individual with no connection to Transnet to serve as Sagar's intermediary. So Sagar and Company One agreed to split consulting fees 50-50, recognizing that a portion of those fees would be paid to CC One, who would in turn pay foreign official one. In return for the bribes, Foreign Official One served as an inside man at Transnet by providing confidential information and coordinating the award of multiple contracts at McKinsey. To avoid detection, Sagar and CC One limited written and electronic communications and met in person to discuss details and contracting opportunities. They used private personal email addresses rather than business email accounts. McKinsey secured confidential information involving specific contract tenders, including the competitors for consulting contracts, and advance assurances that McKinsey would receive the award, in particular one involving Transnet's acquisition of certain locomotives. Further, at CC1's urging, Sagar increased the amount of money given to the local partner Company One to the detriment of McKinsey, even though Company One contributed little to no work for Transnet. And on several occasions, McKinsey was able to secure sole source contracts, avoiding the competitive process. So that's Transnet. Let's look at Eskom and the work that they did there. In 2015, multiple Transnet officials transferred to Eskom. CC2, another third-party intermediary, spun off a new consulting company too. Sagar joined McKinsey's Eskom team to secure valuable consulting contracts. Sagar worked with CC1 and CC2 as intermediaries to Eskom, foreign official two. McKinsey engaged Company Two to participate in the bribery scheme as the local partner pursuant to South Africa's local content requirements. Foreign official two focused on the fee split of 50-50 between McKinsey and Company Two, while recognizing that a portion of the fees would be paid to foreign official two and CC2. Based on this understanding, CC1 agreed to set up a meeting with key Eskom executives, and McKinsey was then awarded a valuable contract worth hundreds of millions of dollars. McKinsey conducted due diligence on the new Company too, beginning after it already had engaged Company too. So they already had onboarded them, were using them, and then decided to conduct due diligence. In March 2016, McKinsey rejected Company 2 after the company failed to respond to due diligence inquiries. Despite notifying Eskom that it would terminate the contract with Company 2, Eskom and McKinsey continued to work with Company 2 for several months. In a separate action, McKinsey terminated its contract with Company 1 after an executive was identified for involvement in a local scandal and another politically exposed person was disclosed. McKinsey's work with ESCOM ended in November 2016. Well, the lessons learned from this debacle here in South Africa, I like to use the phrase by Yogi Berra, deja vu all over again. And Yogi Berra said it best, we've seen the scenario before. Similar parties, corrupt foreign officials from ESCOM and Transnet, state-owned enterprises, local partner requirements, resulting in engagement of unqualified businesses and corrupt third parties who assist the bribery scheme in exchange for a cut of the action. This is a familiar set of facts and was on full display in the ABB and SAP cases brought late last year and early this year, respectively. So let's talk about some of the lessons learned. Obviously, third parties, the red flags and warning signs in the Transnet scheme were evident from the beginning, starting with Foreign Official One's introduction and referral of Company One and CC One in the Transnet scheme. In other words, the introduction of these two entities to McKinsey reflected the virtual certainty that bribes would be paid to secure contracts from Transnet at the behest of Foreign Official One. Equally problematic was the injection of Company Two into the ESCOM bribery scheme and its failure to satisfy McKinsey's due diligence requirements. McKinsey engaged Company Two and CC2 without satisfying due diligence requirements. Even when rejected, McKinsey continued to rely on Company Two for several months after its due diligence rejection. Both of these infirmities underscore the complete absence of a meaningful due diligence process and the lack of enforcement of McKinsey's risk management controls. All too often, we observe companies engaging suspect third parties without satisfying basic due diligence requirements. It is essential that any engagement of a third party cannot occur unless and until the prospective third party has successfully completed the due diligence process. Even with this major problem, McKinsey apparently had no meaningful controls to monitor third-party activity to ensure that Sagar, McKinsey's senior official, was adhering to third-party controls and no improper payments were made. So another issue to look at is contract competition for big contracts, big public tenders. The McKinsey case stands as a poster child for the need for robust controls and oversight of contract competitions and awards, especially when such contracts are worth hundreds of millions of dollars. McKinsey's bidding and competitive efforts were executed under the singular eye of Sagar, a corrupt executive who eventually pled guilty to an FCPA offense. In the absence of such controls, a company can be corrupted through the actions of a single or small number of executives. If subject to such controls, requiring review of all bids by an internal tender committee consisting of representatives from business, marketing, legal, and compliance will help in terms of mitigating risk. The purpose of the tender committee is to review, monitor, and ensure that the company competes fairly and transparently. Finally, local partners. Companies face a unique set of risks when subjected to local partnership requirements in various foreign countries. This is especially prevalent in the oil and gas and defense industries where foreign governments face public pressure to ensure that some of the financial benefits are shared with local companies. In the face of this significant requirement and corresponding risk, companies have to increase their vigilance to protect against entanglements with local businesses with corrupt ties to government officials. In many cases, the identified local partner lacks sufficient qualifications to assist the company and has tangible ties to key government officials. Well, that's it. That's the McKinsey case. Pretty straightforward. Another South African type situation and all too often comes up with all the requisite elements and all the sort of ingredients for a real mess of bribery. Well, thanks everybody. Happy New Year again to everybody. And we'll see you next week with another episode of Corruption, Crime, and Compliance.
If you enjoyed this episode, the best way to support the show is by subscribing on your favorite listening platform. To learn more and connect with Michael Volkov, go to volkovlaw.com.